Welcome everyone to the R&M A Conversation on Cinema podcast, where you get different perspectives from two film fanatics separated by Portuguese and British borders, but united by their love for cinema. Now, it's time to join Rhys and Manuel as they talk about the films they've recently seen, the films they anticipate, and the latest film industry news. Over to you guys.
What is going on, people? Welcome back to R&M, A Conversation on Cinema. Today, myself and Manuel are going to be discussing three films. They are as follows. The big one, and only big because of the two characters involved, is Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. We'll then be talking about a film called The Beautiful Game. And then finally, we'll finish up on the new Ghostbusters film, which is titled Ghostbusters The Frozen Empire. So, two Empire films, one film based in the English Empire. And yeah, so let's start on the main one, which is Godzilla X Kong. From speaking to Manuel on Twitter, I have a feeling that this is going to go one way and it's just us disagreeing totally. So, firstly, I'm going to tell you what my thoughts and feelings are because I need to get them off my chest because I've been waiting for days to talk on this. So I just didn't like the film at all. It didn't do anything new. It was absolutely stupid. It didn't need to be called Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire, because Godzilla is a side piece in the film. It is another Kong film. It is not a Godzilla film. And yeah, I the initial Godzilla of this new iteration, I mean. So the first Godzilla and the first Kong film, Skull Island, big fan. Thought they were both brilliant films. And then when they were brought together for Godzilla, King of the Monsters, and then the last film which came out, which was was he not? Well, the first two films I liked anyway, the initial films, yeah? And then it just got ridiculous. And I know for some people, the ridiculousness is what they like about these films. But yeah, we was not a fan at all. The villain was awful. Just waiting for Godzilla to turn up and save the day is appalling, considering these two are meant to be enemies, right? And Godzilla, man, if that geezer turns up in your city, just know he's going straight to the most known monument and he's wrecking the hell out of it. I thought Look, I'm going to say this, though. Dan Stevens, I thought, was brilliant in the film. I loved his character. However, every other human character was goddamn awful and shouldn't have been in the film. It just didn't do nothing for me. People were whomping and hollering next to me, and I was, every time people were getting excited, I was like, for fuck's sake, this is so bad. It just wasn't for me. Maybe my taste is changing. Maybe I'm just turning into an old grump. But there was nothing.
You're becoming real negative POV.
Rio's negative POV, exactly. But there was just nothing new in this film. I didn't think the CGI, the graphics, were anything to write home about. It was just a lackluster entry into these films, into the MonsterVerse franchise. It's the 38th film of the Godzilla franchise and the 13th of the King Kong franchise, which is just absolutely insane. And for those that don't know, the film is predominantly set in Hollow Earth, where Kong is currently residing. Godzilla is on Earth, kicking the shit out of kaijus and basically just romping and destroying every monument known to man. And yeah, I just felt like it was lackluster in every way, shape or form. The script, the story, the acting, yeah, everything. I just did not like it at all. And I think I'm in the minority because when I came out of the screen, a lot of people seemed to love it. But yeah, not for me. So what are your thoughts and feelings regarding this one?
I don't think we disagree on some aspects. I think we just interpret them differently. Like, I don't know, you said it was stupid. It is. I think I was the first one to message you. I mean, saying it was that the Godzilla vs. Kong was so much about the whole Earth and discovering it. Then the Monarch show even addressed it even more. But then this movie is able to get a whole Earth inside the whole Earth, like an underground, world. Then inside that underground world, you have this secret society that's protected by an invisible wall or something, then inside that slide area of something else, they kept going further and further into the core of the planet or whatever you call it. But it is stupid. And I think that when you look at the first Godzilla and even the first Kong, they clearly made a creative decision of, okay, we need to, for some reason, be more ridiculous. And I didn't mind that change. Also because Godzilla King of the Monsters was a huge disappointment to me. Kong, at the time that I watched it, was just okay at best for me. With time, with the recent years, my opinion has improved on it. But at the time, it was also not really something that was working. So when Godzilla vs. Kong came up, I was like, okay, finally. They kind of gave me what I wanted at the time, which was monsters fighting, but I actually could see them, which was the main problem of King of the Monsters for me. And they kind of regressed a bit on the losing so much time with the human characters that were not interesting. This film kind of continues a lot of what Godzilla vs. Kong did, in the sense that they know what's entertaining, they know what audiences like, and they gave us that. Like you said, it's quite funny that they go to the main monuments of the world, but that's kind of the point. It is stupid, but it's just a way of, hey, have you ever imagined the pyramids getting destroyed? Here's the pyramids getting destroyed. Have you ever imagined this very well-known city getting crushed to bits by monsters? Here's that city crushed to bits by monsters. So, and I think that's clearly the path that they're taking. I have fun with it. I still prefer the first Godzilla vs. Kong, partially because of some things he said. Dan Stevens, I love him. I had so much fun with him. It made me laugh out loud in many ways that I didn't expect. I hoped that Rebecca Hall's kids, whose name I'm not forgetting, had less of a... they tried to make her into the MVP of the film, or at the MVP of the story, I would say. But I don't think it worked very well. I think they just tried to force it down our throats, maybe to try and get like a native hero or something like that. But Brian Thierry Henry was fine. But yeah, the human characters were definitely not as compelling as even in the previous film, because they come from the previous film, but I think Brian Tyrion on the last film had a lot more to do than in this one. He was just psychic to Dan Stevens, and they were both kind of a comic relief. But I like the action, as everyone else. I was not as impressed as in the other films, because the other films kind of just impressed us when they first came out, and now you're kind of used to it. You know, I know that. I can praise the consistency, you know, that there's never a moment or a shot or a sequence that visually you're like, oh, they screw up the VFX here. Everything looks pristine. Everything looks pretty great. They clearly, I don't know what the VFX team does to get such consistency across all of these works, but it does look pretty good. Sound design is great. I was a bit underwhelmed by the main villain, if you can call it that, but I had fun with it. It's okay. I don't think it's the best one. I still prefer the first Godzilla over every other Monsters film, but it fulfills the main requirement of handing fun to people. And I know it's a very basic thing, but I don't think it's terrible. I don't think it's a trash, as you love to say. But it's okay. I would recommend it to anyone who enjoys watching a blockbuster and having fun at the theater with family or friends. But it's not something that I'm going to remember by the end of the year. But it's a franchise that interests me. I'll go to the next Godzilla film. I'll go to the next Kong film. I do wish that Godzilla had more screen time instead of just spending the entire film recharging to become Super Saiyan or something, or being Super Saiyan. How is it being Super Saiyan Rose? That's what I'm thinking. I enjoyed it. I recommend it. I do think you're in a minority per se, but it's not like it's a very, very small minority. I don't think the film was received as as overwhelmingly positive as the last one was. So you're not alone.
Yeah, so one of my other problems as well is that they bring back a deceased character and it's just like there's no conversations about it at all. Ends with Khafra.
Sorry, yeah, for a second.
Yeah, it just doesn't. Obviously, the film's been out for a minute now since this podcast is out, so spoilers there. But they bring back Mothra, and it's just, again, it's just shit. Not a fan. But I don't know. I just did not like it at all, to be perfectly honest. And I won't be there for the next one, unless it gets completely rave reviews and people that disagreed that had the same opinion as me on this one changed their mind on that one. I won't be watching it. But let's go on to the next film, which is a film called The Beautiful Game, which is directed by Thea Sherrock and stars Bill Nighy and Michael Ward. The film is been released on Netflix and is all about a group of English homeless footballers who go to play in the Homeless World Cup, which is being held in Rome. So this is not a great movie. There are some wholesome moments in the movie. There are some brilliant sections of the movie. But overall, it is a pretty lackluster, run-of-the-mill, try-and-pull-on-your-heartstrings film. Some brilliant characters, even though a lot of the roles that they had to play were extremely cliche when it comes to what a homeless person is. But then also on the flip side, I think there were some other intriguing characters which really opened your eyes up into homelessness and how people coming from different countries, migrating, people's family issues, substance abuse. There's so many things that can lead to someone being homeless. And while this done it incredibly well at points, it did feel extremely cliche at others. This is not going to win any awards. It's not going to blow any socks off, but it is a decent enough movie for people to check out. I think Michael Ward is a brilliant actor. He's been fantastic in everything I've seen him in so far. Obviously, he was in Top Boy for all the UK listeners. He was also in the film, which I've forgotten the name of now, the one with Olivia Colman, which is in, is it Brighton? The Sam Mendes film.
Empire of Light.
Yeah, Empire. I thought he was brilliant in that as well. Fantastic actor, and I think he is going to go far. Bill Nighy is himself. I don't think Bill Nighy's had to put in a bad performance ever in his life. The acting from everyone else involved was fairly decent. I do feel like the weakest aspect was probably the script and some of the character development. Again, my biggest critique is that many of the lines in the film, story beats, and characters did come off did come across as a cliche. But yeah, it's definitely one that people should go and check out and see if they like it for themselves. Obviously, fans of football will get some added enjoyment from some of the football scenes. And it is led by, like I said, Bill Nighy and Michael Ward, and directed by Thea Sherrock, who it looks like she has directed a couple. Oh, she was the director of Wicked Little Letters, which I believe has just come out. And that film stars Olivia Colman and Jessica Buckley. Which is funny because I was just chatting about Jessica Buckley on Twitter. So, yep, indeed. But just wanted to quickly have a small moment on that film because I don't think a lot of these smaller Netflix films get enough coverage. And also, again, it's a British film starring British actors and, you know, what we like to champion around here. So go check out The Beautiful Game on Netflix. It's free and it's definitely worth an hour and a half of your time. It's a nice, easy, light go and watch. And it might pull on a few heartstrings.
By the way, just before you go into Ghostbusters, because since you mentioned the Netflix film, I watched Musica this week that premiered on Prime Video, Amazon, and I would just like to leave a recommendation for people who like either rom-coms or sort of musicals. It's not a musical in the sense of people jump into singing, but there's a lot of instrumental music that has a narrative impact. It's a story about a guy who has synesthesia, which is one of those, I don't want to call it disease, I'm going to say condition, where some people have, you know, if you say a name, they think of color, or if they smell something, they think of a song or a sound. And in the case of this film, you have a character who's a protagonist who everyday sounds turn into melodies and turn into rhythm and is able to create music through it. And again, it's a formulaic narrative overall, but the craftsmanship in this play is very, very impressive. It's from apparently a very well-known YouTuber, Rudy Mancuso. I don't know him. I wasn't familiar with his work. But he directs, produces, co-writes, composes, and stars in this film. And my God, it's really impressive. And when it comes to the directorial debut and all of the other debuts, really, it's very impressive how technically intricate the film is. Like the editing, the way it mixes all the sounds, of the everyday sounds into music and choreography. You have a lot of extras doing a lot of stomping and then hitting, you know, kitchen stuff with their appliances and all that. It's really, really interesting. It's a rom-com that where the main romance is actually compelling, which a lot of rom-coms can be able to do. I was very much invested in the film, and it might generally be one of my, you know, if it's not my second, it's my third favorite film of the year so far. It's great. And as a Portuguese speaker, even though it's a Brazilian-American culture, it's nice that they actually cast Brazilian actors in this case to speak Portuguese and not the usual stuff Hollywood does with this language. So and there's a lot of jokes that even me being Portuguese, I can get from the Brazilian culture, and it was very awesome to watch those moments play out. Again, it's on Amazon Prime Video, it's like 90 minutes, not even that. It goes by super fast. It has Camila Mendes, which was my main like attraction for that film, because I think she's a really good actress. She has like genuine chemistry with Rudy Mancuso, because they are an actual couple now in real life, and you can see that on screen. So yeah, I just wanted to leave that recommendation, because it's a really, really, really surprising film. And a lot of the people that I've talked about it were equally surprised, because no one expects usually these sort of rom-coms, especially that come out on a Prime Video, to be more than just okay. And this one was really, really impressive, especially from a technical standpoint. So that's my recommendation as well. We can move on to Ghostbusters, my friend.
Yeah, so Ghostbusters is a film that I haven't seen yet, and that is solely due to time. Not due to the fact that I don't want to watch it. This is one that I do want to watch. Big fan of the first two Ghostbuster films, especially the first one, and also was a big fan of the previous one that came out with Grace McKenna, which is basically Afterlife, the one that just came out. So I'm interested in this one. It hasn't had the best reception, but I would like to know your thoughts and feelings regarding this one.
Yes. I had a very hot take in the beginning of this week before going.
Yeah, don't mention that on this podcast, please. No more negativity to be spoken.
No, not negativity. I enjoy all movies. I'm just saying that my favorite Ghostbusters film is Afterlife. And because I was surprised, it wasn't.
Blasphemy.
I don't care, man. I didn't grow up with Ghostbusters when I was a kid, so I never had this sort of nostalgic connection with it. I always enjoyed it. But I missed Afterlife when it came out, I don't know, a couple of years ago, 2021 or whenever it came out. Don't know why, just missed it. It was probably during summer, so maybe I was on vacation and I couldn't catch it. But I rewatched it last week in preparation for Frozen Empire, and I was blown away. Not in the sense that it's a fantastic film. I don't think any of the Ghostbusters films is super incredible. But I was impressed with how entertaining and interesting it was, especially the new characters. Makina Grace is the star of this new Ghostbusters cast, by far. And that's not an exaggeration. I know Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon are in the cast, and they're equally good. But Makina Grace, it's insane. And I remember when people were talking about her a few years ago regarding another film that she did that I don't remember. But
she's fantastic in everything I've ever seen her in. She's been phenomenal. She's brilliant in The Haunting of Hill House, the Netflix, the Mike Flanagan Netflix show as well.
She's incredible. She's absolutely incredible. Yeah, and I'm obsessed with the way that she can, even the other day I was talking to my partner about it, she can wink excluded.
For the age, she
just moves her eye and nothing else. Like, her eyebrow doesn't move. It's so weird and so comedic as well. And they play into it more in the second film, where she tells, like, these sort of bad jokes in the realm of science. And she finishes with a wink, which is incredibly amusing. But The Frozen Empire, I didn't like it that much in Afterlife. I think it's a very mid film when it comes to the, you know, talking about the franchise as a whole. I still enjoyed it to the point of giving it a positive review, and I obviously recommend it to anyone who's a Ghostbusters fan. It just continues from when the previous one ended. It goes with the main cast of Afterlife, but also brings back the old guys from the original Ghostbusters more. In Afterlife, they only show up more like in a prolonged cameo at the end. In this one, they're secondary characters, just like everyone else. Bill Murray less than the others, but he still has a lot more screen time than in Afterlife. And I love the dynamics between the two casts. I think that's definitely the standout of the film. You can see that they're having fun. You can see that the classic actors are coming back with the joy of returning to these roles. The new actors are having the times of their lives, you know, belonging to this franchise and having to act with the original actors. And that's definitely the standout of the film. I liked the action overall. There was even a car chase sequence that I found very, very riveting, if I can call it that. But overall, I agree with what a lot of people were saying, especially the ones who didn't like the film, about it felt a bit underwhelming and a bit empty, emotionally speaking. Afterlife really got to me, and obviously because Afterlife is dedicated to one of the actors who died before they could make the film. Or did he? I don't remember if he actually shot some scenes, but I don't think so. But there's a lot of an homage style film to not only the actors, but to the original film. And that's why Afterlife works so well. This one doesn't have that help or that factor to elevate the film. So it kind of lost a little bit of the emotional appeal. And I think that what they do with this film is try to have Regina Grace and Paul Rudd kind of have to, that sort of, in the beginning, she doesn't look at him as the father or as her new father, and they have this dynamic until the end of the movie, but I don't think they nailed that. I think that was like, there were a couple of dialogues missing for that relationship to truly hit as they intended. That said, Phoebe's arc, Regina Grace's character's arc, is by far the most interesting. You know, again, she gives a phenomenal performance. Her expressions are funny as hell, and then she nails the comedic timing of her jokes. I like that they try to raise themes about the isolating feeling of not belonging anywhere. She clearly is a nerdy kid, if you can call it that. You know, she feels like she doesn't really have friends, to the point that she actually develops a repressed friendship in the whole film is with a ghost. And it brings up a lot of interesting dialogues with it. I think the best dialogue of the show is definitely, of the show, not the show, the best dialogues of the film are definitely between the Grace character and the ghosts that she encounters when playing chess in the park. Overall, it's fine. I enjoyed it. It falls short of its predecessor, but I think the cast, both from members of the classic and the new cast, inject enough energy and charm and emotion to compensate for some narrative inconsistencies and also pacing issues. It's unlikely to become the favorite installment of any fan of the franchise, but I think it's an adventure with enough entertainment to satisfy families and friends all around the world.
All right, well, I'm definitely going to check it out, guys. Make sure you check out the film as well. Do you watch Invincible on Amazon?
No, but I've obviously heard of it.
Okay, cool. So we might potentially touch on Invincible Season 2, which has just finished, on the next episode. I'm due to watch the final episode once we finish recording. So next week we'll have that, and I'm not entirely sure what else there is going to be.
Well, I have Civil War, and I also watched the First Omen, which horror movie. I know that you guys already had Immaculate. I only had Immaculate a few weeks later. but I watched The First Woman, and I'm going to watch Civil War and maybe also Back to Black, the Amy Winehouse.
Okay, cool. So we'll talk about a couple more movies next week. I don't know if I'll have too much to talk about because I haven't got much booked in, but until then, peace out.